studies at California State University at Northridge. We've been exploring the life and legacy of Ruben Salazar, someone not very well known outside of the Latino community, but certainly a pioneer of American journalism. That does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdel-Quddus, Aaron Mate, Angelique Comet, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, and Robbie Karen. I'm Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time, once again, for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening in the middle of yet another heat wave. But there's hope on the horizon in the form of Hurricane Earl, which may slam into the coast of Long Island, but probably won't. It's early yet, though. There are still many hurricanes that could come and cause all kinds of mayhem and excitement, which is what we're so desperately in need of, all of us. Well, a lot of interesting things going on. Yeah, a lot of interesting things going on in the world. A lot of interesting developments in technology. We're going to try to get to all of it as soon as we possibly can. We're going to try and take phone calls, too. We're going to see. We're going to see if it's doable. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. Interesting story that is coming out of Holland, as many interesting stories do tend to come out of. This one started in the United States and wound up in Holland, and that's where it's continuing. Two men are being held in the Netherlands. They may have been, this is a bizarre story, they may have been trying to test U.S. airport security by putting bottles with electronic devices attached in checked baggage. That's according to a U.S. law enforcement source. Now, this all unfolded yesterday. They were taken into custody after landing in Amsterdam on a flight from Chicago. Now, both men were being held at Amsterdam's Schiphol International Airport at the request of Dutch National Police. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said they were arrested after suspicious items in their luggage raised concern. Now, keep in mind, what's bizarre here is that they already made the trip. They had already landed, and that's when they were taken into custody for having something suspicious. In other words, they were allowed to fly with something suspicious in their checked baggage. Yeah, it's weird, and it gets weirder. The items were not deemed to be dangerous in and of themselves, and as we share information with our international partners, Dutch authorities were notified of the suspicious items. That's according to the U.S. agency. The matter continues to be under investigation. That U.S. agency, of course, being the Department of Homeland Security. Now, what were the items? The items were an empty shampoo bottle with watches attached to it, and an empty bottle of a stomach medicine with mobile phones attached. That's raised concern that the man may have been testing a future terrorist plot. That's all it takes, apparently, to be thought of as a terrorist. Now, I don't know enough about this story, to be honest. Not sure why somebody would attach a cell phone to a Pepto-Bismol bottle, which is probably what it was, right? Stomach medicine? I'm just guessing. And then watches attached to an empty shampoo. It sounds bizarre. It sounds really bizarre. But again, you're allowed to take these items on your checked baggage in the first place. So what kind of a test would this have even been? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, you can have a full shampoo bottle in your checked luggage, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I know, that is. As far as I'm concerned, you should be able to take it on the plane itself and pass it around from passenger to passenger. But whatever. Now, attempts to sneak liquid explosives aboard jetliners were at the heart of a 2006 plot broken up by British authorities. That case led U.S. authorities to ban all but small quantities of liquids from aircraft cabins. Again, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, because not all liquids are bad. Certain liquids perhaps could be, but certain solids could be as well. Really kind of, it's a weird way to try and make people feel safe by banning all liquids. And of course, you have lots of liquids on the airplane to start with. You have water in the bathrooms. You have mixed drinks all throughout the place. So, the way they deal with these alleged threats are sometimes more bizarre than the threats themselves. Anyway, according to CNN, U.S. law enforcement officials said the checked bags contained knives and box cutters as well. Now, here's where the story is kind of misleading. They say passengers have been banned from carrying those items on aircraft since the September 11, 2001 attacks on New York and Washington. True that, yes. They have been banned from carrying those items on the aircraft. These were checked. It's not illegal to take box cutters in a box and check them. You can transport all sorts of things if you check it. That's sounds like the rules are being followed. It's strange, granted. I never travel with a box cutter. I usually just buy one when I arrive. Shouldn't have said that. We got us. The point is, they weren't doing anything other than being a little strange. How on earth is it possible for somebody simply traveling with an empty shampoo bottle and some cell phones and watches and other permitted items in their checked baggage as they were supposed to be doing? How is it possible somebody could be held, imprisoned, detained, interrogated, just for that? Well, their names were Ahmed Mohammed Nasser al-Sufi and Hezem al-Marisi. Huh? Yeah. Now you're catching on. They were both aboard United Airlines Flight 908 from Chicago to Amsterdam. Al-Sufi began his trip by boarding a flight in Birmingham, Alabama. Al-Marisi originally flew from Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah, they came from different places. But did they know each other? Well, they must have with names like that. They had to know each other, right? They all know each other. Another U.S. law enforcement official said both men were in the United States legally. All the hijackers on September 11th were also in the country legally. You see a pattern here? Their countries of origin were not immediately known. That's also suspicious that we don't know what their countries are. Maybe they told us, but we didn't believe them, which means we still don't know, and hence it's still suspicious. The official said neither of the passengers were carrying items that are barred from the aircraft, and federal air marshals were aboard the Chicago to Amsterdam flight. However, the law enforcement source said Al-Sufi was ticketed for a flight that went to Washington's Dulles International Airport with continuing stops in Dubai and Yemen, while both he and Al-Marisi were aboard the Chicago to Amsterdam flight. Al-Sufi's luggage went aboard the Chicago to Washington flight without him, in what amounted to another violation of U.S. safety protocols. But again, he didn't do that. That was the airlines doing that. I'm sure we'll hear more about this story. It's just bizarre. I just learned of this morning, and all kinds of red flags are flying as far as this. It just seems like another instance of people jumping on what, if you phrase things in a particular way, yeah, it could sound bizarre. It could sound bizarre. But I think the real icing on the cake is when you realize what these people's names were. And I think that's the only thing that turned this into something worthy of international agencies getting involved and detaining people. Who knows how many other people carry empty shampoo bottles in their luggage? But I have an open mind, willing to see where this goes. What I'm less willing to concede to are all these, do I want to say morons? Well, there are morons. There are morons involved. So, yeah, I don't want to concede to the morons and other less moronic people that have taken up such a stance against this this mosque in Lower Manhattan. And you know, I'm even not saying it completely properly by phrasing it this way. At least I'm not saying the mosque at Ground Zero, which is what these people are framing the debate in, by basically giving a false statement to begin with. You're able to get a lot more people on your side. It's not a mosque. There's a mosque included. There's a mosque there right now. Because if you walk inside the old Burlington Coat Factory, as I did last week, there are people praying in there. I walk down the street. There are people praying in the street. Sure, that's something that would annoy some people. But it's reality. It's part of life. And to say that it's a mosque at Ground Zero. First of all, it's not at Ground Zero. It's two blocks away. And there's another mosque, I believe, four or five blocks away, which has been there for many years. There's never been an incident. And that really is a mosque. This is not a mosque. This is a mosque within a community center. It's a 13-story community center they're proposing to build with Islamic roots. That's not a crime, last I checked. But today, one of those Quinnipiac University polls came. Does Quinnipiac University do anything other than butt into other people's business, ask a whole lot of questions? I think I've asked this before, but have you ever heard of anybody who majored in biology at Quinnipiac University? You know, I've never heard of that. I've only heard of them asking other people questions. Anyway, according to Quinnipiac University, this poll that was released today, more than 7 out of 10 New Yorkers want the developers of the proposed Islamic Community Center, which contains a prayer room, and that's accurately phrased, a proposed Islamic Community Center, which contains a prayer room. More than 7 out of 10 New Yorkers want to see that that proposed Islamic Community Center move someplace else. They should move it to somewhere away from the site of the former World Trade Center. The poll found that by 54 to 40%, surveyed New Yorkers agreed that the Islamic group has a right to build the mosque, but by 53 to 39%, those surveyed said that the mosque should not be at the site because of the sensitivities of 9/11 relatives. The heated, sometimes angry debate over the proposal to build a mosque two blocks from Ground Zero has New York State voters twisted in knots, with some of them taking contradictory positions depending on how the question is asked. According to Maurice Carroll, director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute, overwhelmingly across all party and regional lines, New Yorkers say the sponsors ought to voluntarily move the proposed mosque to another location. And by 71% to 22%, New York voters said that the state attorney general should investigate the financing of the mosque project. Now, that's interesting because that got Mayor Bloomberg in a bit of a tizzy. He says an investigation by the state attorney general into the finances of the proposed $100 million Islamic Community Center and mosque near Ground Zero would set a terrible precedent. He says there's no reason for the government to investigate donations to religious organizations. U.S. Representative Peter King disagrees. Of course he disagrees. You know, that guy, I swear to God, I have no problem calling him chief moron. He is an embarrassment. He's not only an embarrassment to the House of Representatives. He's an embarrassment to Long Island. And I don't mean that just as a representative of the United States Congress. I mean as a citizen, he's an embarrassment to this region. And it just upsets me greatly that he's always the person that gets quoted, because he's always going to say something stupid and reactionary and inaccurate if he can barely string a sentence together in the first place. Ugh, just gets me angry. But anyway, here's what he said, just so you get to hear his opinion. The ranking minority leader of the Homeland Security Committee says a number of terror plots have emanated from mosques. Ergo, all mosques are suspicious and must be investigated and are potential terrorists. Might I remind the good representative of the many evil things that have emanated out of churches and synagogues in the form of human beings that later went on to do terrible things? And I'm sure we can look at our nation's schools, too, because just about everybody who's committed a crime in this country came from one of those. It's just it's the spreading of hatred and ignorance that really annoys me here. And I can listen to the argument that it makes people uncomfortable that Muslims are so close to Ground Zero. But I just hope people who have that view take a good look at what they're saying. They're saying an entire class of people should not be near this particular site because of what some misguided followers of some version of their religion did. If we started making those rules everywhere, any place where people died in the name of Christianity or any other religion, they all have blood on their hands. It doesn't defame the entire religion. It doesn't defame all the people who follow that religion. Meanwhile, the Ayman leading, who is leading the plans for the Islamic Center, said today the fight is over more than a piece of real estate and could shape the future of Muslim relations in America. And that regrettably is going to be the case. I fear these people are going to be pushed, they're going to be bullied into not building the mosque there. I keep saying mosque, community center. We have to get it right. I'm buying into this stupid debate. And by being forced to move the community center someplace else, outside the community perhaps, basically ignorance wins. And fear and hatred and all that good stuff, which I believe is what the terrorists were promoting in the first place. Unreal. The dispute has expanded beyond a piece of real estate and expanded to Islam in America and what it means for America, said Ayman Faisal Abdul Raf. He said this to a group of professors and policy researchers in Dubai. He suggested that the fierce challenges to the planned mosque and community center in Lower Manhattan could leave many Muslims questioning their place in American political and civic life. I can't see how it wouldn't. He avoided questions over whether an alternative site is possible. Instead, he repeatedly stressed the need to embrace the religious and political freedoms in the United States. I am happy to be American, he said. Like many of our fellow Muslims, we found our faith in America. And this is a very disturbing story to be following. I mean, yes, of course, the media is going to hound him and say, is it possible that the site could be moved someplace else? Of course it's possible. And that's the reason that question is not really being embraced, because, yeah, it's possible to move it someplace else. But what would that say if that were to happen? What would that say about the power of ignorance and fear and prejudice and racism and all that? It would say that that can win. That can push people into doing things that they really shouldn't have to do. And if you look around the neighborhood, there are so many things that you could point to that somebody could take offense at who lost relatives or friends on that day. Meanwhile, I think there's a strip club there, right? There's all kinds of tasteless tourism things. There's other religious sites and various things like that. There's no limit to what you can take offense at, and to take offense at an entire religion because of the actions of a few people, that says more about you than about them. And we have to wake up and see that. And this is spreading throughout the country. It's going to be rather disturbing. Especially if it's going to be disturbing either way, because if the Islamic Center is built, it'll probably have to be protected like synagogues in Eastern Europe have to be protected against neo-Nazis. They'll have to have people guarding it 24 hours a day because of all the idiots that might try and burn it down. And if it's forced to not be built there, then you'll have all kinds of other pressures being put on Muslims throughout this country, because they know they can win. Here's something this weekend after a suspected arson and reports of gunshots at an Islamic center in Tennessee over the weekend. Nearby mosques have hired security guards, installed surveillance cameras, and requested the presence of federal agents at prayer services. Muslim leaders in central Tennessee say that frightened worshippers are observing Ramadan in private, and that some Muslim parents are wary of sending their children to school after a large fire on Saturday that destroyed property at the Islamic Center of Murfreesboro. Federal authorities suspect the fire was arson. The Islamic Center has attracted national attention recently because its planned expansion into a larger building in some ways parallels a controversial proposal to build an Islamic Center two blocks from the site of the September 11th attacks in New York. The Murfreesboro Center, which has existed for nearly 30 years, suddenly found itself on front pages of newspapers this month and on The Daily Show. It's probably the most astute political program we have in this country. It became a hot topic in the local congressional race, with one Republican candidate accusing the center of fostering terrorism. A Republican candidate accusing them of fostering terrorism. Now, his name's not Peter King. They got their own version of that down there. Also trying to link it to the militant Palestinian group Hamas. Then on Saturday, the police said someone set fire to construction equipment at the site where the Islamic Center is planning to move, destroying an earth mover and three other pieces of machinery. And on Sunday, and this is while CNN was filming a news segment about the controversy, someone fired at least five shots. SM Fadi, head of the center's planning committee, said, "We're very concerned about our safety. Whatever it takes, I'm not going to allow anybody to do something like this again." Another mosque, the Islamic Center of Nashville, has installed indoor and outdoor surveillance cameras, hired round-the-clock security guards, and requested that FBI agents be on site during worship services. According to the Imam, Muhammad Ahmed, Mr. Ahmed said, "Whoever did this, they are terrorists. What's the difference between them and Al-Qaeda?" Well, for now, they're less successful, but they're certainly taking notes. And up in Buffalo, New York, in that region, five Orleans County teenagers are charged with disrupting a religious service at a Town of Carlton mosque after they allegedly honked their car horns during a service and fired a gun outside of another. And it's not the first time they've done this either. One of them was charged with second-degree criminal possession of a weapon after he allegedly fired a shotgun in the area of the mosque during a similar incident. So these things just keep happening. And right here on Long Island, the town of Oyster Bay has closed a Bethpage Mosque due to code violations after local residents pressed the town to inspect the property, sending about 200 congregation members elsewhere during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Now, were there violations? Perhaps there were violations. But I'm more concerned with why the community is taking such a keen interest in making sure they close down this mosque. You have to wonder what the motivation of that is. How many other buildings around have minor code violations that could wind up shutting them down? Quite a few, I would imagine. Yet there aren't crowds of concerned neighborhood people pursuing them. Here's an editorial written by someone named Greg Sargent, talking about the opponents to the Park 51 project, that is the community center in Lower Manhattan. You'd think that opponents of an Islamic community center near Ground Zero who want to avoid accusations of Islamophobia might want to further their credibility by speaking out against the disturbing number of recent anti-Muslim incidents elsewhere in the country. On Saturday, as we mentioned, there was an attempted arson in Tennessee. There have been acts of anti-Islamic vandalism in California and Queens, protests against proposed mosques and community centers in Wisconsin, Ohio, Kentucky, and California. Last week, a Muslim cabbie in New York was stabbed by a passenger who asked if he was Muslim. And meanwhile, a church in Florida is organizing a Burn the Quran Day. Yeah. But the Park 51 opponents have been remarkably quiet about these incidents. Consider that Washington Post editorial writer Charles Krauthammer has written three columns on the New York mosque without mentioning any of the protests against mosques far from Ground Zero. Why the silence? Either Park 51 opponents don't care about the larger anti-Muslim backlash, or they don't want to be seen defending American Muslims in any context. Of course, the only way to sustain opposition to the Park 51 project is by, on some level, holding all Muslims responsible for the acts of Al-Qaeda, which is also the only rationale that supports opposing the construction of mosques anywhere in the United States. Arguing that opposition to Park 51 has nothing to do with Islamophobia becomes harder once the larger anti-mosque backlash is taken into account. Yeah. That was written by Greg Sargent, a piece called The Plumb Line. And just yesterday, Newsweek put out a piece, The Taliban Versus the Mosque. Taliban officials know it's sacrilegious to hope a mosque will not be built, but that's exactly what they're wishing for. The success of the fiery campaign to block the proposed Islamic Cultural Center and prayer room near the site of the Twin Towers in Lower Manhattan. By preventing this mosque from being built, America is doing us a big favor, Taliban operative Zabihullah said to Newsweek. Like many Afghans, he uses a single name. He said, it's providing us with more recruits, donations, and popular support. America's enemies in Afghanistan are delighted by the vehement public opposition to the proposed Ground Zero Mosque, in quotes. The backlash against the project has drawn the heaviest email response ever on jihadi websites, far bigger even than France's ban on burqas earlier this year. And that's all related, too. We're getting more messages of support and solidarity on the mosque issue and questions about how to fight back against this outrage. He also claims the issue is such a propaganda windfall, so tailor-made to show how anti-Islamic America is, that it now heads the list of talking points in Taliban meetings with fighters, villagers, and potential recruits. And most likely on their chat boards, too, wherever those are, and their Facebook groups and all that. We talk about how America tortures with waterboarding, about the cruel confinement of Muslims in wire cages in Guantanamo, about the killing of innocent women and children in air attacks. And now America gives us another gift with its street protest to prevent a mosque from being built in New York. Showing reality always makes the best propaganda. This guy's remarkably frank, I gotta say, for somebody in the Taliban. Wow. Taliban officials say they're looking forward to a new wave of terrorist trainees from the West, like this year's Times Square car bomber. Yeah, the class of 2010. That's what they call them. I expect we will soon be receiving more American Muslims like Faisal Shahzad, who are looking for help in how to express this rage, said a Taliban official who was a senior minister when the group ruled Afghanistan and who remains active in the insurgency. And the final quote of this story, the more mosques you stop, the more jihadis we will get. Unreal. And not one to agree with the Taliban very often, but yeah, you know, this is the kind of thing that does tend to piss people off and make them feel isolated and victimized. And that's not what this country is supposed to be about. So rather than look at this as being forced into doing something, ask yourself why you would be opposed to doing something that is normal, that our country was founded for, to allow people to express themselves religiously however they see fit, as long as they're not hurting others. All right, that's an interesting story, and it just keeps unfolding. The one thing I don't want to see is for this story to evaporate and quietly have the place moved, because that would be a very, very bad precedent, and it would give strength to all those people around the country who are trying to intimidate people and get their way. All right, I said we were going to play with technology, and we're going to do that. As you probably know, Kyle's not here today. He's back in Seattle. In fact, this is the first show that he has not been a part of since mid-June. Can you believe that? Mid-June. Well, we can fix that, because what I'm doing right now, I'm logging onto my Gmail account right here on the computer. Don't worry, I'm going to change my password right after I do this. Gmail, good folks at Google, have just introduced a new feature that allows you to make phone calls directly from your computer. You can walk around and talk to people on your laptop. And what I'm doing right now is I'm entering his phone number. Now, I'm not sure he'll be able to hear us. That's the thing. He might not be able to hear us at all. But you'll be impressed by how quickly the connection is made. I've typed in his phone number here. And, I have to download a voice plugin to make a call? Oh, no, really? I'll bet it won't let me do that. Let me see if that's possible. Install voice and video chat. Well, it's doing something. It's doing something. I thought it would ask me for a password. And then I'd have to figure out how to hack the USB system. Okay, it's mounting the disk image. Google Voice and Video Installer, something or other. This package will now run a program to determine if the software can be installed. And, okay, now it's welcoming me to the installer. That's pleasant. Okay, I need 21.9 megs of space. I'm sorry to put people through this. I didn't realize I'd have to do this, but, okay, click install to install this. I'm clicking install right now. And, it's asking me for the password. Okay, so I can't do this. Damn. I'm sorry. Oh, boy, I didn't think this would happen. Wow, I went to all this trouble. Okay, well, you know what? It's not as easy as I thought it was. For me, it was a lot easier. Actually, that's not entirely true. It was rather difficult. All right, let's do this. Let's get on the phone instead. Hopefully, I can still use one of those. Okay. Landline to landline.
Hello?
Wow. Kyle, Emmanuel Goldstein, WUSB Radio in Stony Brook.
Oh, hey, Emmanuel. How you doing?
You might remember me from the summer.
I do remember you from the summer.
Okay. And that sounded like a really nice ring you had just now.
Yeah, that's the ITT 501 set. It's from 1984.
Okay, it's not that old, but it's...
It's not as old as the 501. I have to get another modular box so I can put it into my punch-down block.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's ringing pretty good. Hey, did you hear about this new thing you can do from Gmail? I was just reading about it.
I just got your text message right now where you were telling me that the stream is down and that nobody can hear us.
Yeah, I can't stream radio show as I often do over the internet. I tried the 64 kilobit stream and I tried the 128 kilobit stream,
well,
and I can't listen.
Hang on, I'm going to try that myself. But let me tell you what just happened to me. I was in fact doing this. I was narrating the whole thing. I thought it was going to work out, and then Gmail insisted on installing software, and it got to the point where it asked me for a password to the administrator account here at WUSB, and I don't have that readily available.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I can't do that.
So you're telling me that you don't know about this ability to call from Gmail?
No, I was trying to call you from Gmail. That's what I was doing. In fact,
that's what it is. All right,
I was in the room with you when
so you ended up having to call me from a phone in the station.
Exactly, the landline to landline, which is really kind of cool. But no, I was with you when you discovered this. You're the one who discovered this when it came out, moments after it came out. I don't know how you don't even have a Gmail. Well, you do have a Gmail account, but you barely use it. But right away, you started using it. And,
It popped up in the Gmail chat list. You have a bunch of friends, I guess, that you chat with, and as soon as it pops up, it's this little line with a telephone. It says "call phones," and according to their blog post, it pops up in your chat list, and you're able to call phones right away. Sometimes you need a plug-in, but yeah, it works really well, and in fact, they've rolled it out to everybody. And so anybody with a Gmail account, if you don't see it apparently logging out and logging back in, we'll fix it so it works.
You know, I just the browser crashed. It's a Mac, and I went back in, and this is what I don't like about Gmail. I'm still signed in, so I have to make sure I sign out. Otherwise, everybody can read my email.
Yeah, you want to make sure you sign out.
Yeah, so now what I'm doing is I'm going to the WUSB.fm site.
Okay.
And let's see if we have that. Do we have that? Yes, we have that. And I'm going to click on it says Off the Wall is on the air right now. I'm going to tune in on the
Book at Xavier University.
Okay, I don't know what I'm listening to right there. Something is, you know what it is. I think I hear Obama. Okay, yeah, Democracy Now! is playing again for some reason. Okay, I stopped that, and I'm going back to the browser. I'm going to click on Hi. On the and that's me.
Book at Xavier University.
So it's coming up
okay,
for you.
I don't know what I'm listening to right there. Something is, you know what it is. It's working. It's working.
Bizarre.
Maybe listeners, if you're listening to us on the internet, could you just call us just so we see the lights light up that we know you're out there? We're not going to take the call. We're not going to force you to say anything. You don't have to even have a thought in your head other than our phone number, 631-632-9872. So if we just see a bunch of those come in, then we know the stream is working for the most part. We don't have to do any more troubleshooting. And you're saving us time that way, you know, that we could devote to something else. And then what we'll do, Kyle, is we'll work on your connection, and the listeners can start focusing on that and be fixing it for you.
Well, it very well may be me. I've been tinkering with some things as I tend to do with all sorts of projects. So,
the phone lines are lighting up. Look at that! Wow! There's people out there.
Oh yeah, so
we have
calling in.
Every line lit up now.
Oh, fantastic!
Thank you, callers, for doing that. Now, since we know you're out there, maybe when we ask for phone calls to take over the air, you'll jump in a little bit quicker. You know, I'm not chastising you. I'm thanking you for doing what you're doing. But it just goes to prove the listeners are always out there. And we do like talking to you. Unfortunately, because of the way the Stony Brook phone system is set up, there's no way for me to have Kyle on the phone and the listeners at the same time. So that's just a fact. So we're going to talk to Kyle for a while. Maybe we'll take some calls afterwards. You're back in Seattle now. How's it feel?
You know, it feels pretty good to be back. Been telling a lot of people about my travels. I actually just visited the Museum of Communications today as I tend to do on Tuesdays when they're open.
You know what's amazing about that is that somebody sent us email to the other radio show saying that that museum was featured in a piece on a TV station known as KNG, King TV, a station that I happen to get actually on my Canadian dish for some reason.
Yeah.
It's online. You can see this this feature on the Telecommunications Museum, the place you go to every Tuesday morning. I thought that was amazing, and it happened right before you came home. So I imagine there was some new people there today.
Yeah, isn't that something? A lot of people were there. Some guy brought in an old payphone that he's installing in his workshop. I don't believe it was a Western Electric payphone, and the guys were tinkering with that. And of course, it wasn't a Western Electric Bell, so there was all kinds of words exchanged about, you know, how to fix it and get it working properly. And I was back with Troubleman Bob working on a panel switch today.
Troubleman Bob.
It was good to catch up. Everybody has been excited to see me. I've, you know, tried to sum up everything I did, and in you know, the couple seconds I get to share. But
well, why do they only give you a couple of seconds?
Well, I mean, in passing, different friends. I'm not just talking about the museum, but just people in general in the area. You know, I share as much as I can, but there's so much that I did and mm-hmm. so many good memories. I think you and I were coming up with a list of all the things.
Yeah, unending list.
All the good stuff right away, but...
Yeah, the bad stuff, we're going to come up with that next. And that's a, but yeah, the good stuff, wow, it's incredible. Now, did you bring back a DVD of your talk at Hope for these guys to see?
No.
Oh, okay, we'll have to send you one. So that,
yeah, somehow I'll have to acquire one. I do have...
why didn't we give you one?
And they actually installed... a TV in the museum for presentations. People can bring in stuff.
Wow, how 1960s of them.
Yeah, they have it's a flat TV. It's high tech.
Okay.
So in the break room, we can actually watch stuff, and I told them I'd bring in the slides from the talk that I gave on the Telephone Pioneers of America at the Next Hope conference, and they were really interested in that. They wanted to see a lot of those, and I also told them a lot about the camp that I was involved with in Holland. And they want to see some of the pictures. And I think pictures really help explain things because there's so much and so many different things you can talk about. It's much easier to focus on a picture and explain that. And it serves the memory a little better, too. So I'm going to bring in some of those. And I actually got the remaining pictures from the camp at ETH0. I was able to have those transferred to me over the Internet. So... I actually have all of the official ETH0 photos from the camp. So
amazing.
Sort of going through archiving things, moving some of the stuff around. I'm going to go into the photo school tomorrow and develop a lot of the photos, the film that I shot while I was away.
And so. The film you had x-rayed, too, so you can see just how much damage those idiots did.
Yeah. hopefully there isn't any, but I'll get through it. I'll look at it and see what kind of good shots I got. And then hopefully I'll be posting that stuff and sharing it with the world so that people can see what all we've been up to, what I've been up to. And again, it's just reconnecting with my various haunts during the weeks that I'm out here. So I'll obviously just be continuing to share and staying in touch with you and all the radio and good stuff that we've been doing.
Yeah, it's. I was going through some of the shows that we've done over the past couple of months, and they've been very entertaining and enlightening. And the ones where we were in the Balkans, the ones where we were here.
Absolutely.
It's just it's incredible. I hope we do many more of those. And we have the next one coming up in the Balkan series will be, I believe, Albania.
Is that? Yeah, I was going to say, I think Albania is coming up.
Yeah. it's great. We're sort of like reliving the trip again slowly.
Yeah.
Every few weeks playing some excerpts both from the radio over there and also from our own voices. And you know, on that subject, when you returned from Holland last week, you had a copy of the International Herald Tribune, and there was a story in there that I finally got around to reading.
Oh, you perused it.
Yeah, it was about Montenegro, one of the countries that we went to over there.
Yeah.
And this incredible plan that they have over there, they have a bunch of businessmen who are investing all of this money, and they have a plan. Right. They say any person willing to invest 500,000 euros or more can... just like that, become a citizen of Montenegro.
Isn't that something?
I mean, how do you even do that? I didn't think that was possible. But if you put in half a million euros, which I think is what, 600,000 U.S. dollars?
Yep.
Then you become a citizen of that country. They're selling citizenship. That's amazing.
And pretty upfront, too. And I think a lot of this investment, I don't know if this matches the article exactly, but from what I read as I was skimming over it, it's surrounding this marina and waterway, access to the water, where they're trying to entice people with, you know, large, like, cruisers and yachts to come in and make port, or I don't know exactly how you say that, but, visit their country and stay there while they're out to sea and all that, so...
Yeah. One of the... one of the people behind this, his name is Milo Djukanovic. He's the prime minister, actually, of Montenegro. He basically is saying it's better than Saint-Tropez, this is becoming a new tourist magnet. There's some controversy, I guess, because Zhukanovich was involved in private business after he stepped down, but they say now that he's prime minister again, he's completely committed to his public role and has suspended all his business activities and relinquished his managerial powers. Whether you believe that or not, there is a bit of questioning going on as to these grandiose plans and all that. He's 48 years old. He's a crafty political survivor of the breakup of Yugoslavia, who steered Montenegro to independence after years of aligning himself with Serbia and its former president, Slobodan Milosevic. Now, this is interesting. A forceful physical presence at 6'3", Djukanovic has a vice-like grip on this place dating back to 1991, long before it was an independent country. Now, I just want to stop right there because when we were in Montenegro, you in particular commented on the fact that everybody there seemed to be really tall, and this guy is 6'3". They're mentioning that in the article. What's going on in Montenegro? Why are people so tall there?
Beats me.
There's got to be a reason.
That's a great question.
There's got to be. I mean, I'm sure they play basketball. I know basketball is a big passion over there.
Well, and in Serbia, too, right? I mean, they've got an incredible basketball team, little-known basketball team. I remember we were actually watching a game while we were in Serbia.
You know, just to give the folks a sense of the tremendous coincidence, first of all, Montenegro used to be part of the same country, so I'm sure the basketball culture was shared between them. But we have friends over here in New York who are from Serbia, and we asked them what kinds of places should we go to when we're in Serbia. They gave us a list of various places to hang out. And we went to one of them. The owner, however, was not there. Everybody was watching a basketball game on TV that was coming from Paris. Turned out the owner was actually in Paris at the game. That's interesting enough. The next day, we flew back home, and we flew through Paris.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah, yeah.
As we were walking through the airport, we saw a basketball team heading to Serbia. I mean, come on. That's just it's too good. It's just too much of a coincidence.
Yeah, we really do bump into stuff like that. Absolutely. It had to have been that team. I'd really challenge someone to prove otherwise.
What other basketball team would be going to Serbia?
Yeah.
So anyway, here's the thing. Some of the controversy involving this. The Montenegrin government has attracted criticism for allowing controversial figures like Stenko Subotic. Stenko. Can you imagine going through life with a name like Stenko? Wow. Anyway, he's a Serbian who faces tobacco smuggling charges in his home country, and they're facing criticism by allowing him to conduct business openly in Montenegro. I don't know. I don't understand this. Why is tobacco smuggling such a big deal? I mean, smoking is bad, granted, but simply moving cigarettes from one part of a country or a continent to another part, I mean, people obviously want them. You're moving them from here to there. I mean, is that really the worst thing that there is, tobacco smuggling? You can smuggle tobacco in this country too. You can, I don't know what the rules are, but apparently if you're in South Carolina or something and you have cigarettes and you bring them to New York, that's somehow illegal.
It's the tax man. You can't get away with the tax man.
But I don't get that because don't you already pay taxes on it when you buy it in the first place?
Right.
Anyway, according to the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, Mr. Djukanovic admitted to being involved in running a cigarette trading company in the 1990s. Here we go again. During the war that followed the breakup of Yugoslavia, he has persistently denied charges of any illegality. So basically, there was a war going on, but they got this guy because he was trading cigarettes. You know?
Oh my gosh.
Italian prosecutors in Naples issued an order for his arrest in 2005, accusing him of being at the center of a conspiracy by Montenegrin officials and the Italian mafia to smuggle huge quantities of cigarettes. Come on, I know there are better crimes being committed out there. This is all about cigarettes. That's the worst thing this guy's done, is smuggle cigarettes.
Yeah, and Emmanuel, do you remember in Bosnia and the whole story and some of the films that we watched, cigarettes were a form of currency during that time, especially during the wars in former Yugoslavian republics.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
It was a big deal. If you had cigarettes, that was, you know, what people wanted. They're fighting for their lives, and a good smoke was a big deal.
Just like in prison, and the same thing happens during wartime.
Indeed.
Very true. So, yeah, that's an interesting story. I'm glad you found that and brought it back. Very interesting memories of that particular place. What other things are you planning now that you're back on the West Coast?
Wow.
So many, I guess, right?
Yeah. I'm getting involved with some of the hacker spaces here.
Mm-hmm.
Getting things cooking again. I had to sort out, you know, of course I've been gone for a while, so sorting out logistics and, you know, the mundane of, you know, checking on things and, you know, making sure you're not past due. That's sort of boring. But some of the more exciting things, I guess, is continuing a lot of the projects. As I said, I'm going to be going to develop some of my film. I'm going to be printing a lot of my art and trying to maybe find a way to distribute it so other people can enjoy it.
Yeah, we have to figure out how to do that because you have so much really good material out there. And
be clever. I want it to be done right. There's so many sort of half, you know, cheapened ways of doing it.
Yeah, you deserve so much more.
The work that I've done.
You deserve so much more than Flickr, you know?
Yeah, or Photo Bucket. Yeah, just go check my bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not going to do that either. But having seen just a small bit of your material, it's simply incredible, and hopefully we'll figure out a way to share that.
Thank you, and I'm going to continue doing all the fun things I like doing out here, bicycling, obviously, and working on automobiles. I'm restoring a couple cars, so I'm trying to finish up a couple of those projects, and family time, too.
Yeah, of course.
Labor Day weekend's coming up. So,
that's right, Labor Day weekend, and 2600 meetings this weekend as well.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that. I'm glad you reminded me. One of the guys from the museum I actually met at a 2600 meeting, and he's been dealing with school and stuff like that. I'm hoping to bump into some 2600 folks at the meeting this week. I'll definitely be making time to head up there this Friday.
Good. We might be having a hurricane visit us. That you don't get those, do you?
Oh, yeah, Earl.
You know, it just seems like Earl is being pushed further and further east, and that he's just going to maybe, they say maybe clouds and maybe a little bit of drizzle. And I want more than that, Earl. I want the whole thing.
Well, hang on to your hats, you know.
Well, I wouldn't wear a hat if it was a hurricane. I'm not that naive. But,
No. I think you'd have fun with it. You'd wear the hat just to see it fly off and you know, mayhem, you know, in your immediate physicality, location.
I'd wear the hat that has the string that attaches to my head, so that way
you can just clip it onto the back of your hat.
Yeah, basically you need little clotheslines for all your clothes to keep them from flying all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, and, hey, one other thing I'm thinking about doing is...
What, hanging up? I think maybe your mouthpiece got disconnected somehow on your ITT phone there, Kyle. Yeah, because you're no longer here. Unless it's on our... No, it's not on our end. For once, it's not on our end. It's on your end. Can you... I'm going to hit a touchtone. Wait, you don't have a touchtone. I'm going to hit a touchtone. You dial if you can hear me, all right? How about that? That's a touchtone. Now, you do a dialing thing. Now, you can't hear me at all. Interesting. I'm going to call you right back. Who am I talking to? Oh, he's gone anyway. Let's try that one more time. It's just rude to disconnect and not say anything in return. Let's see if maybe his whole...
Hey.
Oh, there you are. What happened? Your mouthpiece broke or something.
No. It was me. I kicked... I've been moving things around in my room here, and I kicked one of the modular jacks, and it's loose. And then I pushed it back in. I heard you for a second, and then it hung up.
Ah, okay. I was trying to communicate with you to see if you were actually there. So you were about to say something really important.
Yeah, no, one other thing I'm planning is more travels.
Uh-huh.
I love being here. I love the Pacific Northwest. It's a great place, but I've been inspired by my own travels and all the fun things and people and places that I've explored and built relationships with. And so I'm starting to think about trips and even I think some of the people locally, I've had people, you know, come up to me and ask, you know, how are you doing this? And, gee, I want to go to CCC or one of these events, you know, are you going to be there? And so I'm just starting to plan out things and get out of here again. You know,
I've heard of many people who are inspired to go traveling as well based on hearing some of the things that we've done and some of the things we've talked about. And, yeah, CCC definitely, and along with other places, and all kinds of surprises ahead on the horizon. So, yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah. And speaking the sound of, you sound pretty good.
Thank you.
Stay well out there, and I miss you already, and I'll see you soon.
Yes, definitely. Time will go quickly, and it won't be long before we're here again in the studio, and the dancers are back in the fall, and the Starbucks thing is continuing.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, that's really the ultimate excitement, is finding out what my first Starbucks will be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look forward to it.
I mean, the Balkans was nice. The Balkans was a good sort of build-up to that.
Uh-huh.
All right, but finding out where that city will be, that's the ultimate.
Absolutely. Gosh, I wish I was there with you right now.
Well, you are, in a sense. I wish we could have done it by the computer, but unfortunately, well, it's a computer, and that's just how it works.
Yeah, par for the course. but I will challenge people to check it out if they're interested. Free calls, U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
The rest of the year.
That's right. I didn't mention that. That doesn't cost anything. They're doing it for the rest of the year, and overseas is like a minimal charge, but it's not free yet. I think all these things will be free at some point.
Correct.
They'll figure out other ways to get money out of us, because when you think about it, you always wind up writing checks to the phone company somehow, or to the cable company or the utility companies. They always get their money, and they'll adapt. They'll figure out a way. Whether you're buying ringtones instead of minutes, you're still paying them.
Maybe you'll start leasing handsets again.
Yeah, you know what? They might just do that. Imagine that, leasing a cell phone instead of buying a cell phone. That way you can just upgrade to the next one.
Yeah, and if you want it in a color, it's going to cost you a little extra.
Yeah, they all have to be black. let's brainstorm about this. We'll come up with a new cell phone company that has the ways of the old Bell system.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Kyle, it's been great.
Hey, with the same quality, too. It's been great listening and hearing you.
Can I ask a favor?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you drop the handset of the phone on the floor, on the bare floor, so we can hear the sound of a phone, an old-fashioned phone dropping?
Wait, a handset or the whole thing?
No, not the whole thing. Just the part that you're talking on right now. Just make sure it hits the ground before you hang up.
All right, here.
Oh, that was great. That is the sound.
Oops, sorry.
That was the best phone dropping I've heard in 10 years.
Hello?
Yeah, that's what it should sound like. That's what phones used to sound like. Oh, wow. Hold on to that phone, because that's a winner.
All righty.
All right, take care, Kyle.
All right, have a good evening.
And it was our friend Kyle out there in Seattle, back home, after being out here for such a long time, a couple of months. We're actually in Holland as well, and we'll be hearing from him in the studio again pretty soon, I think. Now, I'm told also that we're going to be hearing some more. The dancers won't be back until the autumn. That's what I'm told. And no one's even heard anything, no postcard or anything from overseas, which is where I understand they are. But we are doing some other pre-drawing things. And I don't even know yet. I haven't gotten my assignment as to what exactly will be happening. But supposedly that's starting next week. And I can play this. What is this, a promo or something? Okay, so this is an explanation as to what will be happening next week. Oh. Oh, what the hell is that? Wait, that was it? There's no voice or anything? Wait, let me see if I understand. That's is there something hidden in there? Well, it sounds very commercial and very commanding. Okay, well, that's next week. Whatever that means. Well, yeah, I know. I get it. Oh, good God. You know what? I'm sick of it already. That'll be next week. Okay, great. We have something to look forward to. If you want to write to us, otw@2600.com is our email address. Off the Hook tomorrow night. We'll be talking about all kinds of other fun things. We'll be back again here next week. Have a good night.
her a great bunch of glasses. Looking at her brings tears to my eyes. Said I'm watching her shake, she's gonna give me a heart attack now, baby. I said